All right, so remember again, we're continuing. Yes. Here's one.
Okay.
And here, no, I have, and here's two. Okay, so we're continuing this morning with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So remember, again, we've pretty much at this point in time gone through the background of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the backstory of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We spoke about, again, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's two different bodies of takanos. What were the two different bodies of takanos? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Zecha l'Korban, and Zecha l'Mikdash. The difference between the two, Zecha l'Korban, the purpose is to mourn the loss, Zecha l'Mikdash, to stoke the anticipatory fires of eager excitement for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Mourn your losses, while at the same time cultivate an ongoing wellspring of hope, of optimism, of excitement for what the future holds. I want to end off with one more biographical piece from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Take a look at number 18 on your sheet. It's actually number 17. So up until now, we've been focusing on Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and we've understood that he had an exceptionally turbulent life, given the fact that he's living through one of the most difficult periods of Jewish history, the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. We saw that he's kind of in the middle of the fight of the Bar Yonim, together with he's dealing with the Prushim, he's dealing with the Rome, he's dealing with everyone. But I just want to point out to you something amazing. Take a look at number 17. So the Gemara in Maseches in Avos Rabbi Nosson writes, Kishemis bino Shrab Yochanan ben Zakkai, Nichnesu Talmidav Lenachamo. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's adversity or difficulty or tragedy in life was not just in terms of national korban. The reason I'm bringing this down for you is why? Because you see that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai suffers personal tragedy as well. Now, we don't have more information about this particular loss, but what we do know is that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lost a child. So, to me, this is always dramatically amazing because we know Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in terms of weathering national challenge. Now he begins to see Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was no stranger even to personal adversity. Even his own loss, his own child. Again, I don't know, the Gemara doesn't tell us the circumstances around this loss, or for that matter, much about the rest of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's family. But clearly here again, you see a man who had to contend with an incredible amount of loss, both national and on Am Yisrael level, and on a personal level, which makes Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai even more amazing. Because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I remember again, almost like generally when we think about Jewish optimism, who comes to mind? Rabbi Akiva, excellent. Right, why do you say Rabbi Akiva? Excellent, right? So the most well-known episode, the end of Gemara Maseches Makos, where again the Rabbanim are walking, again we're actually going to study this topic inside a bit when we talk about Rabbi Akiva, but they're walking and they see the fox emerge out of the site which was the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Rabbanim begin to cry, Rabbi Akiva begins to laugh, and the Gemara there has its whole explanation. Rabbi Akiva generally is thought of to be the bastion, like the paradigm of Jewish optimism, which is, of course, is true. I would just add to that I think Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai kind of shares that title as well. Because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the one who, when so many elements of Klal Yisrael ready to throw in the towel and ready to give up, he was the one who said, no, life is difficult, things are hard, there are incredible scars from our trauma, but at the end of the day, we will find a way to move forward. And when you begin to see that while he's inspiring Klal Yisrael to be optimistic, he's struggling with his own loss, so it compounds the enormity of this man's personality. You begin to see the greatness of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. You know, it's easy for anyone to be cheerful and optimistic when life is good. Right, of course, everyone is always optimistic, filled with hope, brimming with optimism. Hey, life is good. Most people, give them a little bit of challenge, and what generally happens? The sky's falling. Everything is terrible, everything is horrible. That's the way most people are. Even if it's not dramatically big challenge, but any amount of challenge, why me? Why is Kadosh Baruch Hu doing this to me? What's the nature of this challenge? And then there are some unique personalities who are able to deal with so much ridiculous tsar and challenge and difficulty, yet never lose their optimism, never lose their disposition. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is such a person. Again, Klal Yisrael has had many, many such people throughout. Again, Rachel Imenu was such a person. People who, despite incredible and overwhelming adversity, still maintain a positive life disposition. Take a look at number 18. And this is the end of the biography of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So the Gemara tells an amazing story. Okishecholo, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai became ill. Nichnasu talmidov levakro. His talmidim came in. Remember, we spoke about this dynamic before. Why are the talmidim coming in? Because he's going to die. And if he dies, remember again, at this point in time, historically, Torah Baal Peh is still Baal Peh. So if the Rebbe dies, whatever Torah he has or hasn't taught goes with him to the grave. So you see, again, remember, whenever the Gemara in general talks about somebody becoming sick, they don't have a head cold, right? They're dying. They're dying. So the Talmidim go ahead and come in, because what are we going to get from our Rebbe in these last moments? So listen to this amazing Gemara. His Kevan Shira Osam, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sees them, Hischil Livkos, he begins to cry. Amrulo Tamidov. So the students, so Amrulo Tamidov, Ner Yisrael, Amud Hayemini, Patish HaChazak, Mipnei Ma'at HaBocha. So listen to what they call. So the students say, Ner Yisrael means what? Light of Israel. Amud Hayemini. The right pillar. Right pillar means what? Strength, right? Strong. Patisha Chazak. Strong hammer. So, why are you crying? So, the students assume, that when students walk in, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai begins to cry, they assume, why is he crying? Because he's sad. Why? He's about to die. In other words, if you're Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and suddenly you see a group of your closest talmidim walk into your room, you know what's going on. Right? You know things are bad, right? If all the talmidim are showing up for this last speaker cholim visit. So they assume that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is crying because he's about to die. And the students are a little taken aback by this. Meaning, what does that mean because he's about to die? They think he's crying over the... Death is scary. Death is scary. We don't know. We believe that there's an Olam Haba. We believe that there's Gan Eden, but we don't know what happens after physical life in this world ends. So it's interesting. The talmidim assume that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is crying almost because he's scared of what's going to happen. Let's see. So what's amazing over here is, what do they try to do? They try to give him chizuk, Ner Yisrael, Patish HaChazak, Amud HaYemini, which essentially is them saying to their Rebbe, be strong, be strong. Why are you crying? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, no, you don't understand. Amar lahem. This is an amazing Gemara. Ilu lifnei melech basar v'adam hayimolichin osi. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says talmidim, you know, if I was being brought before an earthly king, shehayom kanu machar b'kever, an earthly king who is alive today, tomorrow he's dead, shim koes alai in kaso kasolam, if he gets angry at me, his anger is temporal, v'mosrani ein yisuro israelam, and if he incarcerates me, he cannot incarcerate me for all eternity, v'mimisani, and if he were to execute me, ein misaso misas olam, he can't execute me, he can't kill me for all eternity, v'ani yochal lefaiso bidvarim, and I could also go ahead and kind of bribe him with words, or I should say appease him with words, u'leshachto b'mamon, or I could bribe him with money, afa pikin ayisi bocha, it would still cry. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying, if I was being brought before a human ruler for judgment, I would cry. Even though a human ruler, what's the worst he could do to me? He can only punish me in Olam Hazeh, he can't punish me in Olam Haba. Furthermore, again, human beings could be bought off. They could be bought off with Hanifa, they could be bought off with flattery, they could be bought off with money. Even if he gives me a punishment, the punishment is temporal, and I would still cry because I'm scared of judgment. V'achshav, Shemolichin osi lifnei melech malchei amlochem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And now all the more says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I know I'm about to die. I'm not scared of death. I'm scared of judgment. I'm scared that I'm going to come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shu chai v'kayom li'olam u'li'ome olamim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is eternal. Shim kois alai kaso kaso. If he gets angry at me, his anger can be eternal. V'mosrani isuro isur olam. And if he incarcerates me, so to speak, he can incarcerate me for eternity. And if he puts me to death, misasol misas olam. His death sentence could be in this world and in the next. I can't appease him with words or to bribe him with money. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, that's why I'm crying. That's why I'm crying. I'm not a crying because I'm scared of death. I'm scared of judgment. What's overwhelming about this? Right? I'm sorry?
But people don't feel like this nowadays.
So people don't feel this. That's true. And that we're going to get to in just a moment. But what else is overwhelming about this? It's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you pretty much saved Klal Yisrael. Like really, that's not even like a hyperbolic statement. It's true. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is responsible for stabilizing Klal Yisrael in the aftermath of the worst Churban. He led a life of Mesiras Nefesh. He led a life of teaching Torah. He led a life of Chesed. And yet, again, he's crying because he's scared. And it gets even more intense. And v'lo'ot, furthermore, elash yesh lefanai shnei dirachim. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, you know, when you leave this world, there are two paths in front of you. Achos shal gan Eden, v'achos shal Gehenom. Ve'eni yodea be'ezo molichim osi. Can you imagine this? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says there are two paths, and I don't know which path I'm being taken down. I don't know if I go down the path of Gan Eden or if I go down the path of Gehenom. V'lo efge, should I not cry? So you have to understand something. So meaning, the students think he's crying because he's about to die. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, it's not death that scares me. It's the unknown of the life that I've led. What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's judgment? What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's opinion of me? Which path am I going down? Is it Gan Eden? Is it Gehenom? And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is literally unsure about what his divine judgment is going to be. Which, what does this teach us about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? I'm sorry?
Humility.
An incredible sense of humility, an incredible sense of anava. And this is an important idea because let's take a step back. We often misunderstand the midah of humility. So sometimes we think that humility means thinking that you're a nothing. If I'm humble, it means I think I'm a nothing. Thinking that you're a nothing ultimately is not humility. Thinking you're a nothing is what?
Low self-esteem,
right? And chas v'shalom could also be indicative of depression. That's not humility. That's not humility at all. Of course I'm a something. Of course I'm important. If I wasn't important, I wouldn't be here. If I wasn't important, I wouldn't have woken up this morning. Of course I'm necessary. Humility means a recognition of what you have done and what you have accomplished, while at the same time understanding that you have yet to begin to even like scrape the tip of the iceberg of your potential. That for everything that you have done, there could be 20 more things that you still can do. So humility is the recognition that, yes, I recognize the accomplishments I have, but I also yet know that I've yet to fully actualize my innate potential. That's why, again, the Torah tells us, who was the most humble person? Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was acutely aware of who he was and his greatness. How do we know Moshe Rabbeinu was acutely aware of his own greatness? How do we know? Because how else would Moshe Rabbeinu have had the chutzpah to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the aftermath of the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, if you go out and destroy Klal Yisrael, what does Moshe Rabbeinu say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? If you're not going to forgive them, mechin nevasifrecha, Hashem says, erase me. Who are you? Who are you? And Moshe says, I'm Moshe Rabbeinu, that's who I am. That's who I am. I'm your Navi, I'm the leader of the Jewish people, and yes, I have a right to argue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now don't try that at home. That's unique with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was a unique personality like that. But you see that anivos, humility, doesn't mean thinking that you're a nothing. Humility means recognizing who you are, what you are, your accomplishments, while simultaneously understanding that there is so much more you can be. Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest anav, but he also knows who he was. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is aware of his accomplishments. He is aware of what he's done. But what is he most afraid of? What is he afraid of? If he knows what he's done, what is he afraid of? I didn't do enough. And amazingly enough, what episode do you think this brings us back to? when he was with Vespasian. Because remember, again, let's go all the way back to that story, where again Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes back into the city of Yerushalayim. He has secured Yavne v'Chachameha. He has secured Shushiltas Rabbi Gamliel, the Davidic line, and a doctor for Rabbi Tzadok, which we still have to come back to. He's done three things. And he's met with what? When he enters back into Yerushalayim, with incredible disdain, animosity, anger, by Rabbi Akiva, by Rabbi Yosef. So what did you do? What did you do? You blew it. You could have saved Yerushalayim, could have saved the base of Yerushalayim, at least for now, maybe for a couple of more years, maybe for a couple of more months, whatever it is. But you should have asked for what we really need, which is a salvation. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai essentially says, listen, I did what I could do. I did what I can do. And so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai on his deathbed is wondering what? He's wondering to himself, you know what? I know what I did. I know what I did. He's not forgetting his accomplishments. But was it enough? Was it enough? Did I really actualize my potential? Did I really become the person that I was truly capable of becoming? Did I really do all of the things that I was capable of accomplishing? Yes. No. They just remember again, they're just asking, why are you crying? They're not sure. Meaning, you assume if you see a person on their deathbed crying, you assume that they're afraid of death. So they try to give him chizuk, but they ask him. They ask him. It's not degrading. Remember again, the goal of a Rebbe and a Talmud relationship is to learn. So if I see something that my Rebbe is doing that I don't understand, I think maybe it's because you're afraid of death, but Rebbe, why should you be afraid of death? So they tried to give him chizuk. He understands from their question that they're misunderstanding why he's crying. It's not chas v'shalom degrading. And by the way, there's another piece. We don't deify our leaders. Right? Our leaders are not perfect. Rabbanim are not perfect. We don't put people on a pedestal to the point that they are superhuman. Great people are human beings also. Judaism does not, you know, it's only by the Christians that they have a concept of infallibility, right? They say the Pope can do nothing wrong. We don't believe in that. We don't believe in that. So the Talmidim are coming in, they see their aging Rebbe crying. It's normal for people to be afraid of death. They try to give him chizuk, and he says to them, they say he's still crying. They say, Rebbe, what's wrong? To which Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, you guys don't understand that I'm crying. Let me explain to you why I'm crying. So this to me is amazing. Because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is sitting on his deathbed and he's crying, not really because he's afraid of the process of death, but what he's most afraid of is what? What he's most afraid of is, did I live my life to the maximum? Did I live my life to the maximum? Did I do what I was supposed to? You know, this is the famous Maisa with the great Hasidic Rebbe, the great Tzaddik, Rabbi Zusha of Anipoli. So Rabbi Zusha said, I'm sure you've heard this before, right? Rabbi Zusha said that after 120, I am not afraid that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to ask me, Zusha, why weren't you Moshe Rabbeinu? What am I afraid is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to ask me? Zusha, why weren't you Zusha? Each of us has potential. Each of us has abilities. And each of us has an incredible number of things that we could accomplish. I don't know, again, I guess you only find out after we leave this world, if we accomplished all the things we're supposed to, or more, or maybe less. But clearly, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is scared that he did not accomplish all of the things that he could have accomplished during his time in this world. And so, he cries. He cries. And again, I want to be clear on something else, because you have to, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai seems to be like also painting like a very severe picture of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That if HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes me, it's for all eternity. And if he incarcerates me, it's for all eternity. So again, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is telling his Talmidim the anxiety that he's feeling. I just don't know if I lived up to my potential. He's not afraid, I don't think, of the averos he committed. Everybody commits averos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands that. He's afraid, ultimately, again, did I not live up to my potential? That's why he's crying. So, okay, look how the Gemara ends. Amru lo. So, interestingly enough, if you notice, the Talmidim have no response to this. Why do the Talmidim have no response to this? Right? Because what are you supposed to say? If a man like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is scared that he has not actualized his potential, that maybe, again, he's underperformed in life. If Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is crying about the possibility of underperformance, so then what is there to say for the rest of us? So instead they just say, Amrulo Rabbeinu Barchinu. Rabbi, give us a bracha. They recognize that he's about to pass away. Rabbi, give us a bracha. So what's the bracha he gives them? This is amazing. Amar lahem, yiratzon shetei mora shamayim aleichem kimora basar vadam. Which means what? Yiratzon shetei mora shamayim aleichem kimora basar vadam. How would you translate that? You should fear God as much as you fear people. Fear God as much as you fear people. Amar lo tamidav adkan. Rabbi, that's it. Like that's the whole bracha, that we should fear God as much as we fear people. Shouldn't we fear God what? More than we fear people? Samar lahem olavai. Olavai means halavai. Halavai, you should fear God as much as you fear people. Teidu, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, kisha adam over avera omer, shelo yirani adam. Because what happens, most of us, when we commit an avera, what are we most sensitive to? That's what? No one else should see me. No one else should see me. What about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees me? So that, okay, that we get over relatively quickly. I don't want other people to see me. Just understand, this bracha, this exchange, is very important for us. Why? What's the opening line of Shulchan Aruch? The opening line of Shulchan Aruch? Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Summit. Which, of course, if you think about it, is incredible. Shulchan Aruch is a work of halacha. If it's a work of halacha, then why is the first statement in halacha, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Summit, I place God before me at all times? Why? Because again, because as the Shulchan Aruch states, as Mishnah Berurah explains, that Balatanya writes about this extensively, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Summit means God awareness. God awareness. I have an awareness that I stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all moments, which is why halacha goes ahead and literally dictates every single aspect of our lives, from the most public to the most intimate. Why? Because I recognize that I stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all times. Shevisi Hashem Lenegdi Summit. And if you can maintain a God awareness throughout your day, then suddenly again, life looks dramatically different. The Mishnah Berurah goes into this, Shulchan Aruch goes into this, saying, people often, as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai say, we often create, or I should say, tailor our behaviors based on the reaction from other people. Most of us have a public face and a private face. I act one way when I'm in front of people. And again, most of us act in different kinds of ways. I don't mean like a dramatically different way, but there are certain things that we would do when we're by ourselves that we would not do ultimately again in front of other people. The truth is, if you think about it, doesn't really make sense. Because at the end of the day, I'm always in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, this is a very difficult level to achieve. A Shevisi Hashem Lenegdi Summit, a God awareness existence. So the bracha that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gives his Talmidim is the bracha of Shevisi Hashem Lenegdi Summit. Fear God as much as you fear man. Know that you stand before, just like you're careful with your behaviors when you stand before another human being, bring that same level of vigilance and care when you go ahead and you stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Incredible. That's the last bracha. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai goes ahead and gives us something. Now, by the way, now that we understand the history of this, we also appreciate this bracha more. Because remember again, what's happening? What's happening in greater society at this point in time? The Jews are under whose control? The Romans. So the Jews understand what it means to serve a human ruler. And they understand the need to behave a certain way in front of the human ruler. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says the same reverence, same respect for authority you have for the Romans, bring that to your Yiddishkeit with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They say, that's it. Rabbi Yochanan says, halavai, we should get to that level. How does it end? Shas Petiraso. Literally, again, as he was dying, he said two last things. Amar Lahem, he said to his students, Pnu Kelim Mipnei HaTuma. Go ahead and what? Move the Kelim, move the utensils because of Tuma. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? So remember, on a very technical level, the halacha is there's something called tumas ohel. Tumas ohel means that if there is a corpse underneath the roof of a particular structure, so the tumah spreads throughout that entire structure, which means that any utensils, specifically earthenware, kli cheres, that are in that home become tameh as well. Now, other utensils, like metallic utensils, can become tar. They can be purified. Paraduma, earthenware utensils, if they contract tumas meis, what's the halacha? You have to break them. There is no takhanah. There's nothing to be used. So this is amazing. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I'm about to die. Get the utensils out of the house. Because if those utensils are in the house with me, they become tameh the moment that I die, and there's ein lo takhanah. There's going to be no remedy. What does this show us? I'm sorry? An incredible sensitivity. Right? Again, what does it matter to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai if the utensils become tameh or not? So that's not going to matter to him, because at the end of the day, he's going to be dead. But it's going to matter a lot to the mishpacha and to others who may have the utensils in this home. An incredible, incredible sensitivity that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had to be thoughtful and mindful of the needs of the other, even when in the midst of personal crisis. This is an incredible yisod, because more often than not, when we are encountering personal challenge and crisis, we usually become fundamentally self-absorbed. Usually everything is about me, and everything is about my pain, and everything is about my suffering, and everything's about my circumstances. The godless of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is that literally, again, he's a breath or two away from death, yet he is thinking about the needs of the other. But there's a simple cheshbon with this. When you live your life, you know, the Maral has this idea that the way a person dies sometimes is a snapshot of the way that they have lived. So when you live your life selflessly devoted to the needs of the other, as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lived his life, it's almost like reflexive. Even in your final moments in this world, you're going to continue to be sensitive to the needs of the other. So with his final breaths, he says, remove the kalim from the home. And his last words, Vehechinu kisei lechizkiyo melech Yehuda sheba. And prepare a chair for Chizkiyo, the king of Yehuda, who is coming. Why is he coming? If you look at number 19 in Rashi, second line, Lechizkiyo Sheba, Eli, Lelevi Sani. Right? Ultimately, Chizkiyo is coming to accompany me. So where is Chizkiyo coming to accompany Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Where is he coming to accompany him? I don't know. Gan Eden, Final Judgment, wherever he's coming. But what's intriguing about this? If you were expecting someone to accompany you on your journey from this world to the next, who would you expect? Elio, I mean, that's usually who we expect, because Elio Navi is the one who kind of travels back and forth, apparently very often, between this world, celestial sphere. So why Chizkiyo? Why? First of all, out of all the people, like, why Chizkiyo? So, any thoughts, why Chizkiyo? Oh, so remember the story of Chizkiyo HaMelech. Remember again, Gemara tells us, Navi tells us the story. Chizkiyo was supposed to be the Mashiach. Was supposed to be the Mashiach. He had the potential to be the Mashiach. Why did he not become the Mashiach? Because he didn't marry. If you remember again, the Gemara tells an incredible story. Chizkiyo is on his deathbed. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Yishayo to go be Mevaker Chola. So there was a whole rift between Chizkiyo and Yishayo, which is a different discussion. Yishayo shows up. He sees Chizkiyo. What does he say to Chizkiyo? You're going to die. Now, very poor Biker Chola etiquette, right? You're going to die. So Chizkiyo says, why? Like, what did I do? So Yishayo says, because you never married. You made a conscious decision never to marry. Chizkiyo says, let me explain to you why I never married. Why didn't he marry? Because he saw Benavua that if he were to marry and have a child, his son would be an incredible Rasha. So he decided to spare Kalal Yisrael, a future Rasha, at an incredibly great personal expense, giving up companionship, giving up marriage, giving up just a regular life, but to save Chizkiyo from Russia. So interestingly enough, so what does Yishayo say to Chizkiyo, essentially? Mind your own business. Why are you getting involved in God's cheshbonos? Your job is not to run the world. Your job is to run your life. That's your job. Don't get married. You were supposed to have a family. You were supposed to get married. Now you blew it, and so you're going to die. So Chizkiyahu says to Yeshayahu, I've heard that you have a daughter, and I've heard wonderful things about her. How about you let me marry her? To which Yeshayahu responds, no. Yeshayahu responds, no, it's too late. I already told you, you're going to die. So Chizkiyahu says, again, okay, I heard you the first time, but I am a descendant of David HaMelech. And we have a Mesorah in our family of Afilu Cherev Chada Munachas Al Tzavaro Sha'adam Al Yimane Es Atzma Min Arachamim. Which means, even if there is a sharp sword resting against your neck, you never give up on divine compassion. In other words, it's never too late. It's never too late. You never know. You never know. So after a little bit of a greater back and forth, ultimately, again, Yeshayahu agrees. Chizkiyahu is healed. He marries Yeshayahu's daughter, and they have a son by the name of Menashe. Menashe becomes the longest serving monarch. He was king for 55 years. 55 years. 33 of them he was a Rasha, 22 of them he did Tshuva. When he was a Rasha, he introduced Avodah Zarah into every single corner of the Jewish kingdom. He tries to do Tshuva, tries to go ahead and clean up the Avodah Zarah mess that he made, but this is an incredible Mussar. Sometimes in life, you can't clean up the mess that you made, or you can't fully clean up the mess that you made. Because sometimes when we do things, there's a dynamic, and you can't always control that dynamic. See, when you want to take it back, even when you want to pull it back, sometimes you can't. So Menashe tries his best. I want to be clear. Menashe dies at Tzaddik. He dies at Tzaddik. And he tried very, very hard to kind of dial back the bad stuff that he did. He had limited success. Limited success, but was unable to undo it. So now, this is what's amazing. So, if you're Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who out of all Jewish history do you identify with most? It appears that who does he identify with most? Chizkiyahu. Why? Because Chizkiyahu could have been the Mashiach. So what does that do with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Everything goes back to that story. Some people in life have like this moment where they stand at a crossroads and they make a decision to go in one direction. And for the rest of their lives, they wonder to themselves, what would have happened had I gone in that other direction? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has that moment when he's face to face with Vespasian. And again, he made his decision. And there is no doubt that he made his decision based on the fact that he felt it was the best decision he could make in that moment, given the circumstances as he understood it. But when he comes back, and instead of throwing the parade, he's getting derided and he's getting accused by his fellow rabbinic colleagues, great tzaddikim, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Akiva, making the wrong decision. Do you, again, like we said, do you think for a moment that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ever stops thinking about the what if? You know, sometimes the most terrible thing in life, you know, when you go out and you make a decision, you have to be resolute in your decision making. Right? The worst thing you could ever do to yourself is second guess your decision making. Why? But what happens to people who second guess their decision making? No one knows. Good. So I'll tell you what happens to people second guess their decision making is they lose the confidence to make decisions. Meaning, what ends up happening is there's something called analysis paralysis, which is you can analyze any single issue and to such a point that simply the only logical thing to do is nothing. So sometimes a person will say, this is my decision, this is what I'm doing, I'm moving forward with it. Is it going to be right? Is it going to be wrong? You know what, in life you make good decisions, in life you make bad decisions, but the ikkar is to make decisions that move forward. So in general in life, the worst thing you could ever do is spend too much time focusing or analyzing the wrong decisions of your past. If you made bad decisions, learn from them, grow from them, don't repeat them, but ultimately, again, don't keep reviewing them over and over and over in your mind. It doesn't do anything but paralyze you and prevent you from making decisions going forward. But yet, there are some times in life where we reach a crossroads and we have to make a dramatic decision. And it is normal as you go through life to always wonder, I made my decision, and I know that in the time that I made it, it was the best decision I could have made. But I wonder, I just wonder, what would have happened had I gone that other way? And if you're Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and you see, after your encounter with Vespasian, you see the walls of Yerushalayim come down. You see over 1 million Jews butchered. You see the Beis HaMikdash destroyed. You see Jewish life turned on its head. You see the vicious and barbaric edicts of the Romans. You see merciless taxation. You see all of this stuff. It's normal to, in your mind, when you put your hand on the pillow, wonder to yourself, could it have been different? And so it's interesting that here Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai assumes that who's going to be Malavahim? None other than Chizkio. Chizkio made a cheshbon. Chizkio made a decision. He made a decision. He thought it was the right decision. That decision cost him the ability to be Mashiach. That decision cost him the ability ultimately to be the redeemer of his generation, the redeemer of his people. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wonders to himself, could I have been the Mashiach? Not literally, necessarily, but could I have been the messenger of salvation for my people or not? Had I asked Vespasian to go home, to spare Yerushalayim, to spare the Beis HaMikdash, would he have listened to me? Would he not have listened to me? And so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai feels that ultimately who's going to be Melavehim, who's going to escort him to the Olam HaMes? None other than an unactualized Messiah. None other than the unactualized Melech HaMashiach, Chizkio Melech Yehuda. Yes?
Can I just ask a question on Chizkio? If it seems like Elijah were supposed to have Mashiach in those times, so if he lost his chus of Mashiach, why
didn't someone else... The one thing I can't answer are Mashiach questions. I don't know. It could be maybe that it's the combination. You know, we say every dar has someone who could be the Mashiach. I don't know that there's a runner-up to that. So it could very well be that the generation has to be worthy, the person has to be worthy. And if either one are not worthy, then Mashiach doesn't come in that generation. That's what it sounds like. It doesn't sound like there's Mashiach A, you know, runner-up Mashiach, second runner-up Mashiach. That's what it sounds like. But Mashiach questions are exceptionally difficult to really comprehend. So that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And with this, so again, get the Kalim out of the house. An incredible concern and focus on the other. Prepare the chair for Chizkio. This is how Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai leaves this world. This is the end of the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai story. I'm going to share with you one more piece. Take a look at number 20. The Sifri writes as follows. And this kind of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai barkta in MS, he has left. The good news is that even with the passing of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Baruch Hashem, because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai saved Yavne Bechach HaMehov. There are many others who are able to, not many others, there are some others who are able to fill the void. Obviously, you know, this idea, was there ever another Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? No. But, you know, in Judaism, remember again, we operate with the mantra of Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmul Bedoro. This idea means, we know that as the generations move away from Har Sinai, our leaders are not as great. But that's okay, because we look to the greatness of our generation. Whether our leaders are as great as they were in the past, not as great as they were in the past, it doesn't make a difference. It's irrelevant. You operate with what you have, and you don't necessarily compare what you have now to what you had in the past. So were there other Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's? No, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is a once-in-a-universe type of personality. But as we're going to see, there were other great people who were able to pick up the rings. Look what the Medrash says. It's actually quite a beautiful Medrash that I think puts Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in a little bit more historical context. Moshe ben Es ben Me'a ve'esim Shana. So the Medrash says, Moshe ben was 120 years old when he died. And the Medrash says, Ze'echad me'arba shemesu ben Me'a ve'esim Shana. This was one of four people who died when they were 120. So by the way, what's interesting about the Medrash, well, actually, let's finish it first. One of four people who died when they were 120. Who were the four people who died when they were 120? Ve'eluhein, Moshe, Hillel HaZaken, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, ve'Rabbi Akiva. These are the four men who died at the age of 120. Moshe hayu b'mitzayim arbaim shana, u'b'migyan arbaim shana, u'firneis es Yisrael arbaim shana. So Moshe Rabbeinu, again, remember, grew up in Egypt till he was 40, runs away from Egypt to Midian when he's 40, spends 40 years in Midian, comes back to lead the Jewish people from the age of 80 until 120. Hillel Azakin, Ava mi Babel ben Arbaim. So remember again, Hillel, who comes back from Babel ignorant, to the base medrash of Shemayin Naphtali in Eretz Yisrael. V'shimesh, Chacham Abraham Shah, from the age of 40 to 80, he learns in the yeshiva of Shemayin Naphtali. Upines es Yisrael Abraham Shah, and then becomes leader of Klal Yisrael for 40 years. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, this is amazing, which is a detail that we never heard of before. Asak bipragmatia arbaim shana. So apparently Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai began his life in what? Pragmatia is what? Business. He was a businessman for the first 40 years of his life. V'shimesh chachamim arbaim shana. Then learned in yeshiva for 40 years. Ufirneis es Yisrael arbaim shana. Then apparently led Klal Yisrael from the age of 80 until 120. Rabbi Akiva Limei Torah ben Arbaim Shana. Here it's interesting. The Medrash doesn't talk about Rabbi Akiva's first 40 years. Rabbi Akiva's first 40 years were what? He was an ignorant shepherd. Then at the age of 40, he goes to learn Torah. He learns Torah from 40 to 80. Ufirneis es Yisrael arbaim shana. And he leads Klal Yisrael from 80 to 120. So amazingly enough, Moshe Rabbeinu, Hillel HaZaken, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and Rabbi Akiva all lived till 120. And amazingly, so first of all, what are the lessons from this? What are the lessons? I'm sorry? It's never too late. Isn't it striking? I think we mentioned this before, but isn't it striking that all four of these incredibly important men, right, really only began to self-actualize at the age of 80, in the last segment of their life? It was from 80 to 120 that we remember them for what they accomplished in their last 40 years, not what they accomplished in the previous 80 years. So incredible. It's never too late. What else? What else do we learn from this?
You don't start great.
It's such an important yisod. Great people become great. They're not necessarily born great. And this is so incredibly important because, you know, sometimes, especially when you read like the more contemporary biographies of great people. So sometimes, again, the story often begins with, and the gadol was sleeping on the basement, in the base medrash bench from the age of 3. He knew Shas by the age of 4, drew water for all the poor townspeople at the age of 5, broke through the ice, went to the mikvah and ice, which is fine. Maybe those are all true stories, but more often than not, great people aren't born great. They become great. And not only do they become great, but very often, They lead very ordinary lives in their beginning. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a businessman. He was an Erlicha businessman. He was a good guy for the first 40 years of his life. What was Hillel doing in Babel for the first 40 years of his life? Hillel was also a businessman. Hillel came from a very prominent and wealthy Babylonian family. He only decides to come to Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah again at the age of 40. Rabbi Akiva is an ignorant shepherd. Ignorant shepherd, knows nothing, doesn't know Aleph Beis, doesn't know anything. Moshe Rabbeinu is growing up. You know, we have this idea of Moshe Rabbeinu. What was Moshe Rabbeinu for the first 40 years of his life? What was he? He was an Egyptian. He was an Egyptian. He wasn't learning Daf Yomi in the base medrash in Goshen, right? He was an Egyptian prince. So you see, our greatest leaders, not only were they not born great, but often they were leading lives that were the opposite of greatness. They were leading mundane, regular, sometimes even un-Jewish lives. Yet amazingly enough, they reach deep within themselves, they find their kochos, and they become someone great. It's a dramatically amazing story, which is it inspires us. Because to be honest, when you hear the stories of people who are born great, what do you say to yourself? Oh, that's not me. That's great. That's fantastic. Right? Beautiful. Beautiful. All the power to them. I'm very happy for them. I love reading the stories. I learn nothing from them because those people are not me. And by the way, that's true. There are some people, I want to be clear, there are some people who are just born in a different way. Even Moshe Rabbeinu is born clearly with something unique about him. But that uniqueness does not actually begin to actualize until when? No. Until when? 80. Remember again, when Moshe Rabbeinu runs away, what is Moshe Rabbeinu doing in Midian? What is he doing in Midian? Nothing. He's just shepherd. He's a regular shepherd. He's when the Gemara says that Vateroso Kitov, Moshe Rabbeinu is born, his mother sees that he's good, and the Kol HaBayis Smalei Or, the entire home filled up with light, that light does not become known what it is until Moshe Rabbeinu is 80 years old. That's the first time anyone begins to see what that light actually meant. Great people, more often than not, are not born great. They choose to become great. Yes?
Moshe Rabbeinu was kind of forced into greatness. I mean, God came to him and said,
right. It's very true. It's very true, right? Moshe Rabbeinu is absolutely drafted into the service of God. There's no, out of the four people mentioned over here, Moshe Rabbeinu really doesn't fit. You're absolutely right. The other three made a conscious decision. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu makes a conscious decision. Moshe Rabbeinu's decision was what?
No.
Hashem Baruch Hu says, thank you. Noted. I've recorded your opinion, but you're going anyway. You're absolutely right. But I also want to point out over here that, remember, you begin to see what does 120 represent. I'm sorry? Right, it represents a unit of completion. Now, because I'll tell you something interesting. Moshe Rabbeinu, we know that he lived till 120. Why? Because Torah tells us. The other three, we know pretty much from this Medrash. Now, who's most striking in this list over here, about 120? Who's most striking? Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because he was killed by the Romans. So again, whether the Medrash literally means, so most of them, we have a Pasuk. Hillel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Akiva. We don't have Pesukim. So again, is the Medrash to be understood literally that all three of these other people also lived to 120? Or is the Medrash just coming along to say that the 120 model represents people who lived through very mundane and ordinary periods of life, made a conscious decision to become great, reached deep within themselves, found that greatness, and therefore, quote-unquote, live a me'evesh. You know, when we tell people, you know, we say, it's all the me'evesh m'shanim tovos. Anyone ever say it to you? Me'evesh m'shanim. And so, does anyone actually mean that? You should live until 120? Who? Does anyone know, anyone live to 120? Person still 100 till 95, 101. So what when you tell someone that they should have admeh the esim shalom tovus, what are you really, what's the bracha you're giving them? You should live a full life. You should self-actualize. You should accomplish. You should do great things. You should reach into yourself and ultimately again find your inner greatness. That's the bracha meh esim shalom tovus. Yes, of course. I'm blessing the person with longevity. But more than longevity, you know, a successful life is not measured in longevity. Right? A successful life is measured in accomplishment. So when I say to someone, "Me'ever esim shalom tovos," Moshe Rabbeinu had that kind of life, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Hillel, Rabbi Akiva, you should lead a life of completion. So what's amazing about this over here is this is Chazal telling us, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you may have been unsure about the nature and quality of the life you led. Maybe you're not sure, did you do the right thing, not do the right thing? You're crying because you don't know if it's Gan Eden or Gehenim. You're preparing your Shefach Hizkiyahu Melech Yehuda because you think to yourself, maybe you are also the unactualized messenger of redemption for your generation. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you lived 120 years. You did what you were supposed to do. You accomplished what you were supposed to do. And Klal Yisrael is forever in your debt. All right, we'll stop over here for today. And Emirat Hashem on Wednesday, we'll actually begin the Mishnah. So we'll spend Wednesday, Emirat Hashem, doing the Mishnah, and then we'll begin the next Mishnah, Emirat Hashem, next week.